This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. What's it like to be a public school teacher these days? In the midst of much heated rhetoric over the quality and direction of American education, what do things look like from the classroom's front lines? Three people have agreed to help us here. One spent 20 years in the Air Force before he recently turned to teaching high school math. Another founded and ran two different successful businesses before she became an English teacher several years ago. The third recently retired after more than a quarter century at middle school social studies. So we expect some varied perspectives. But for the widest variation, we are also going to invite anyone listening who's ever been a teacher, ever been influenced by a teacher, or ever had a thought about teachers to join in too. Might that include you? We'll find out right after the news. Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. The life of teachers is our focus this hour, and you are invited to join the conversation at 888-WMRA-TALK. What do we need to know about what goes on in public school classrooms? What do you feel you already understand about being a teacher? What more would you like to understand? And no offense intended, but with the kind of heated rhetoric going on across the country about education today, we do have to ask this one as well. Just how much of America's education problems are due to inadequate teaching? Your comments, questions, assessments, invited at 888-967-2825. Here in the Insight Studio, three teachers. Margie Shepherd, recently retired from her longtime position at Henley Middle School in Albemarle County. But she is still busy as part of a national program that teaches teachers. More about that in just a bit. Also with us from Rockbridge County, high school English teacher Susan Petriella. And from Augusta County, high school math teacher Paul Chigfry. Welcome all.
Thanks, Tom.
Well, good to be here.
Glad to be here.
Well, Paul, I want to pick on you first, if I could, because actually you have the most recent experience of not being a teacher. You were in the Air Force for 20 years, primarily as an aviation mechanic for fighter jets, traveled all over the world, retired as a senior master sergeant, then settled into the Valley to work in private aviation for a time. And now you teach at Wilson Memorial High in Fishersville. So with all that, here's my question.
Yeah.
How much different is being a teacher than what you might have thought of the profession before you became a teacher?
Wow. Okay. Well, supervising 60 people in the Air Force was a lot easier than looking after 20 to 25 students in your classroom. It's a lot harder. Teaching is a lot harder than I thought it was going to be. It has more ups and downs. Some days are just fantastic, and then some days can be bad.
So, what creates a bad day?
Trying to corral or take care of 25 different moods of students in your classroom and
now
get them
all
facing the right way.
With the high school, so 9th grade through 12th grade, remind us of what ages that would be.
14 ninth graders are normally around 14 years of age, and then anywhere up to 18 for the seniors, I believe.
Yep. Is that 18.
So there are days when one or more students are having some sort of emotional meltdown, and that has to all of a sudden become a priority?
Oh, how could there not be emotional meltdowns? There is so much, can be so much drama, and you've got 25 students. And so some days are perfect, and we can get on and have a really good time, and we're all focused in, or we're all kind of having fun. But then, Jimmy or Johnny could be having a bad day, and you're trying to deal with that, or either leave them alone for the day or just try to help them out or just bring them back in and get the class going again.
It could be the impact of all kinds of things that are going on with students or things
this,
that are going on.
This, by the way, is Margie Shepherd.
Oh, sorry. Things that are going on that are from administration, central office said this report has to be in by the end of the day, and you're dealing with 75 students that day, and you're, when it sort of hits a tipping point and you're trying to get the test done, and you know, it can be a bad day.
Now, Margie Shepherd, you've been teaching pretty much all your career. You started
pretty much right out of college. Yeah,
I had and you taught special education for a while, first in private school.
I had my first degree was teaching art. Then I taught reading, then got a master's in special education, did that in private school for 10 years, then switched to public school, English, social studies, world geography, and then when the state curriculum changed, civics and economics.
So I had mentioned that your public school teaching was 25 years. You tack on the 10 years before that in private 30. School. You've been in
I'm old, yeah.
classrooms.
Oh, no.
But you started when you were 10. So you've been teaching for 35 years
Correct.
As opposed to Paul, who started teaching about 7 years ago.
Right.
After all of this experience in the military, retiring as a senior master sergeant, directing lots of people in lots of complicated situations all over the world, he says teaching is harder than he ever expected and probably harder than his work in the Air Force. As somebody who's been in education for more than three decades, are you surprised by that?
No, not at all. It has also gotten harder in the 35 years that I've been teaching because of expectations, reporting, testing, the things that are imposed on it, in addition to you want to do your own creative work as a teacher. You know, part of why I retired, I love working with the kids. I loved working with my team. I really got tired of spending all day Sunday grading papers just because of the quantity. They've pretty much loaded up all the planning period so that they become meeting periods and other things. So there's just a lot more to it, you know. As I had one student teacher who was questioning whether she wanted to go in it or not, and I remember before she ever started, I said, "You might want to rethink this. I said, this is a really tough job if you love it, and if you don't love it, it's impossible.
It's miserable if you don't love it."
Yeah. Well, Susan Petriella, let's pick on you for a minute.
Okay.
Because life for you started in New England.
Mm-hmm.
Early in your 20s, you started working in the insurance business, and actually by your late 20s, you co-owned an insurance brokerage firm that specialized in aviation, I understand. You might want to talk to Paul afterward.
We'll get together on that.
And you co-founded that. You eventually sold your share in that business, moved to Virginia, started another company, this time a combination manufacturing and retail operation that specialized in selling chocolate.
Candy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
confection.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That
everyone's everyone's favorite. I thought I was going to make the world a better place.
Chocolate
transition
does.
I realize that now.
So did that for many years, successfully sold that business, and then went to your first love, which you had, I understand, long wanted to do, got into teaching, went back to school, got a master's. You now both teach English and are chair of the English department for Rockbridge County High School.
I am.
All that business experience, all that experience outside of education before you got to do what you're doing today, how much different for you is teaching than what you might have expected?
Well, it was nothing what I expected. I mean, that's a hard question. You go into it. I mean, you take these courses that are supposed to teach you how to be a teacher, and you do practicums, and you observe, and you do all this sort of hands-on, you know, you do your textbook classroom stuff, and then you have your hands-on stuff. But then once you get in your own classroom, it's just not anything I expected. Not in a bad way. It just wasn't what I expected. It was great. I loved it. I had a great time. I love my kids. But I think my daughter is a teacher, and she went to Mary Washington, and they started right away with them in their sophomore year, I think, getting them in the classroom and spending more time in the classroom than the traditional teacher programs. But I still think no matter how much practice you get or how, you know, it's once you're in your own classroom,
yeah.
it's just entirely different.
That ownership of your own classroom and your own practice. And that's what sometimes gets taken away by politicians that are looking at it like, oh, you can do this formula or you can do this computer program for teaching. No, you have to own your own curriculum, your own classroom, and you use your style to help influence the way you teach and catching the kids.
And for me, it took years just to get comfortable with doing my own style or mm-hmm. being my own person inside the classroom. To where, okay, I'm gonna have a good day, no matter how you are. I'm gonna have a good day, and we're gonna have fun. And you gotta kind of get your attitude each day when you go in there. So it took me a few years to just say, hey, this is my room, and this is how we're gonna.
I think that's true. It doesn't just happen. You really have to cultivate your style and your classroom and all of that. And back to Paul, what you were saying earlier, it's you open the door and you walk in the building and you're on until you leave the building at the end of the day with a sack full of papers to grade and lessons to plan. And you're going the whole time, and you have to be ready to change. Like, you may know what you want to do in class, but it may not be the day for that because of what's going on in your classroom. You might have to alter, or your lesson might be falling flat. You thought it was the best thing ever, and all of a sudden, yeah. No one's responding. You have to be ready to shift gears in a second. You have to have a plan B, a plan C.
I did a this Margie. I did a aptitude testing at one point, and they were talking, you know, I came out teacher, which was a good thing since I'd been doing that for a while. But the key element for a good teacher is a flexible mind. And that's exactly what you're saying, Susan, mm-hmm. that you've got to be able to shift gears. Every year, you talk about showtime, you know, you just, every year when the first day of school comes on, it's showtime. And you are trying to figure out who your students are and how that's going to alter the way that you're going to interact with them.
So, Susan, we mentioned some about your extensive business background. And it was, if I understand correctly, 13 years ago that you started teaching back in 1999.
Mm-hmm. This will be my 14th year. Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to make you sound as old as Margie, but
it's okay.
You did say something about it being a lot different than what you expected. Tell us more about that.
Well, everybody goes to school, so everybody thinks they have some sort of grasp on what it means to be on the other side, the teacher side. We've all sat in a classroom, and so we've all had probably positive and maybe not so positive experiences with teachers. And until you become a teacher, that's your frame of reference. But it's entirely different being on the other side.
Well, I wonder if you can tell us a little bit about that, if you remember what you expected and then what you got.
Well,
that was,
yeah,
so
my kids were going to love to read, and they were going to want to be good writers because my energy was going to be so infectious that they weren't even going to be able to deny it. They were all going to be avid readers, and they were going to see the power of the written word. I mean, honestly, I was so foolish, but I was optimistic, and I'm still optimistic, but I also know I'm a little more realistic now and know that not everyone is going to be an avid reader.
Right.
Right.
You, and you realize the attention span of kids, which, you know, one of the issues is people that go into teaching often are those kids that were sitting up in the front listening to every word the teacher said. And then you get on the other side and, you know, you didn't know what was going on with the other 3/4 of the class, and the average attention span of an adolescent is 11 minutes. And so you're shifting gears all the time.
Well, so, there's this rumor about Mr. T, as his students in Augusta County know him, that high school was academics not his forte when he was a teenager. Any truth to that rumor, Mr. Chigfry?
Oh, about me? Oh, total truth. Yes, we can never tell a lie. That's
so
sure.
Do you identify with, I think what Margie was saying is that most people who become teachers really loved academics.
Well, I think there's a split. Yeah. Half of them do.
I was the other split growing up. No, I school was just something to have a good time with and try to see your buddies and actually, you know, get done and be done with it.
Does that make it any easier for you to get through to those kids in your classroom today who aren't much interested in academics?
Time will tell. I think it helps me get to know what maybe they're thinking or how to get through to them maybe a little bit.
Yeah.
You can hear the music, can't you? Yep. Means we have to pause for a 1 minute break, so we'll be back soon. We do have phone lines open at 888-WMRA-TALK. If you listening have a question for our panel of teachers, an experience with a teacher or teaching yourself that you'd like to share, or thoughts about public school education, we'll be back in 1 minute. Margie Shepherd, early in her career teaching, specialized in special education at a private school outside Charlottesville. Several years later, she switched to public schools and spent the next quarter century teaching primarily English and social studies at Albemarle County's Henley Middle School. U.S. Air Force Senior Master Sergeant retired Paul Chigfry worked in private aviation for a while after his 2 decades in the military, and then went back to school himself. And in 2005, he hired on as a math teacher in Augusta County's Wilson Memorial High School, where he still works today. Susan Petriella is a former insurance broker who specialized in aviation insurance, but after selling her share of that Connecticut brokerage company she had co-founded, she moved to Virginia and then co-founded a combination manufacturing and retail operation called the Cocoa Mill Chocolate Company. Eventually, she sold that business, went back to school, became a high school English teacher. These days, she both teaches and serves as chair of the English department at Rockbridge County High School. My name, by the way, is Tom Graham. This is Virginia Insight. You can reach us by phone, where we're now starting to get some calls, but we still got some lines open at 888-WMRA-TALK. Or if you have comments or questions, you can also reach us on our Facebook page, where we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. What is it that people in general who don't have any experience as teachers don't understand about your job?
I'll take that one just for a second. Not sure if this fits into that category, but one thing I like to get across is as a teacher, we really need the parents' help. I can't do it alone. Without the parents' help with the child, I don't stand much of a chance getting through or making sure they're getting it, or, you know, just staying organized, especially for 9th and 10th graders, you know, first coming into high school. It's a big transition.
But isn't that why I pay taxes, send my kids to school? Teachers are supposed to make them intelligent and smart.
Absolutely.
And you guys take care of it all.
Absolutely. Well, that last part, I could just take a little bit of issue with that.
They have to be on the same team. The teachers and parents have to be on the same team, not opposing teams.
It's three of us working together. It's got to be the child. It's got to be the teacher. And it has to be the parent. The kid can't just come home and throw the backpack into the corner and everything's hunky-dory till the next day they get up and pick it back up and bring it to school. I do my best, but I need help. That's
yeah,
just the way it is.
I have to agree with that. I mean,
this is Susan.
We are with them. Well, in high school, I mean, I only, depending on what your schedule is, I see my students for 50 minutes a day every day, and I see 110 students a day, which is a lot of students to keep track of. Nobody, I think, has that many children at home. and so for the parent to check in and say, you know, what's your homework? What's coming up? What can I do? Check in with the teacher. I would say even regularly, instead of waiting until that disastrous moment when there's a zero or there's, you know, an issue with a grade, so that everyone can keep moving forward in a positive, successful way.
Yeah, a lot of it just is the communication that you were talking about, Susan, that checking in. It's a lot easier now with sort of online curriculum and calendars and I had parents that would email me if they were worried about their kids, and that was fine with me. It's much better than doing phone tag and just keeping on top of what's going on. But also just ask your student when your student comes home, what went on in class today and what do you have to do tonight, and put it on to the parents and the students to be responsible for what they're doing instead of, yeah, as you said,
so
waiting
Margie Shepherd,
for the report card.
As we know that you've been at this for a bit more than 35 years, and although you're officially retired as of last year from your public school teaching work, you now teach teachers to become better teachers. So what I'm curious about is basically the same question that we threw to Paul to begin with. What is it that you have a sense that people who don't do teaching for a living don't understand about your work?
I guess the how constant it is, which And that's just a pet peeve. People that will make a flip remark, oh, it must be great to be teachers. You're out at 4 o'clock and you get the summer off. And teaching is a constantly evolving thing. Teachers have to improve their practice every year just to stay where they are. I mean, it's constantly dealing with the students. It's constantly dealing with their papers. It's constant planning and recertification. And it's just an all-consuming job. So it's a tough
job.
You
work till 4 o'clock? Seems to me that when there was lots of political controversy in the past year going on about teachers, I saw some clips on Fox News where they were talking about teachers all getting done with their workday at 3 and they were at the mall by 4.
Yeah, that would be lovely.
I hope you saw the Jon Stewart response to that Fox clip.
On The Daily Show.
On The Daily Show. Jon Stewart is a teacher advocate, thankfully. Somebody in the media is.
Have anything to do with the fact that his mother was a teacher?
Yeah, so he understands what teachers do. I'd like to add to what Margie said. I can't speak for Paul or Margie, but I wouldn't be surprised if they would concur. I would say that my job is always with me. Even I'm not necessarily at school. I'm not necessarily sitting down at my computer or grading papers. I might be out running. And yet in my mind, I am always, always thinking about my classroom, right. Who makes up my classroom, how to best serve my classroom, how can I make my lessons better so they're more appealing to my students. And honestly, I have some of my best ideas when I'm out on a run, but it never goes away. And as I said to you when we talked before the show, you really ought to speak to a spouse of a teacher to get a feel for what living with a teacher is like.
Right. Your spouse is a assistant Commonwealth's attorney.
He is.
A prosecutor. Deals with lots of bad guys.
He
spends lots of time.
Yeah, he does violent
fighting
crime.
For justice.
Very violent crime.
What does he think of your job?
Well, he understands that when he goes to court 2 or 3 times a week and never for the whole day, that he gets now that going to court and teaching are about the same, except he only does it 2 or 3 days a week for a few hours at a time. And I do it every day, all day, and then have to do all my follow-up after the end of the school day.
The same how, Susan?
He's on. He is in court. He is prosecuting a case. He is interacting with witnesses. He has to have all of his evidence and all of his witness line. He's got to have everything prepared so that when he's on and not making mistakes. And it's not much different than what we do on a daily basis.
Right. Showtime.
It's showtime.
Yeah, I think you're so right when you said that earlier, that as soon as you come into school, you're on. You turn a knob, you're on. You're performing from the minute you're in there until the minute you're done. And even when the day is done, I'll be home and saying, that didn't work. Oh, I think this is why that didn't work. Or I know what I'm doing tomorrow, and it's going to be the best thing in the world. And I don't understand why Jimmy doesn't like to do parabolas at 8:30 in the morning. Why not? I thought about this all night, and then all of a sudden you go in a different way, like you said.
Right. So this thing about being on. Explain this to me. That if you worked here at this radio station, you would spend much of your day. Let's say, Paul, that you were a talk show host. Doing research and planning for upcoming shows and finding new topics and new guests. You walk down the hall, maybe wearing shorts and a t-shirt, and that's fine. You're supposed to, I suppose, unlike maybe what's happening right now, when you're in front of a microphone, be focused and attentive and concerned to lots of different factors. But the other 7 hours of the day, 4 or 5 days a week, doesn't matter what your facial expression is or quite how perfectly you express yourself. Do I have the sense that when you are a teacher in a public school, that any time any student might see you in that environment, it's important that they see the most professional side of you?
Professional, yeah, but I think they still need to see me as a human, because like when you say on, I perform in a band, and I consider this the same thing. you're on, you research your audience, you know what you're supposed to do, or you know how to, here's how I want to engage them today and get them kind of moving forward. And you have to be professional, but yet let them know and or see that you're a person. And no, I'm not trying to be their friend, really. They want a friend, they can buy a puppy. I'm not there to be their friend. I'm their mentor, their someone to look up to, and their teacher.
Yes, it's not just that you're trying to look professional or anything, but it's all of the time. So it's the time that you're teaching, the time that you're going around and working with groups, but also between classes, I'm standing out in the hall and seeing what's going on and the interactions between students, see if somebody seems to be having a problem. Is some kid crying in the hall? You know, pull somebody aside and try to find out what's going on because their homework's not in, and dealing with parents. And it's just, it's all the time. It took me, after I retired, a while before I could slow down so that my lunch wasn't consumed in 15 minutes, because that's all there was. You're going all of the time and trying to take in all the different aspects of all of the students around you and working with your team and working with administration.
Just so my boss doesn't get too upset with me, I ought to point out that there actually are no talk show hosts here who come to work dressed in T-shirts and shorts.
No, that's a great tie you're wearing. Yeah. It looks really good on you.
Rockridge County High School English teacher Susan Petriella, teacher of high school math in Augusta County, Paul Chigfry, and former teacher of middle school social studies in Albemarle County, Margie Shepherd, are here on Virginia Insight, helping us get a better understanding of the life of teachers. If you'd care to join the conversation with a comment or question, we do have a phone line open for you at 888-WMRA-TALK. Next to Harrisonburg, Jessica, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment, please.
Hi. I would just like to concur with these wonderful professionals that are speaking on your show today about how involved we become in our job. It isn't just a job. It's everything that we're thinking and breathing and blood that's pumping through our body as the day goes on. Whether it's for good reasons or bad reasons, I mean, we're always thinking about our students. If they're hurting, we're hurting too, because we can see that on their faces and they can tell us about it. And that might manifest in good or bad ways, but either way, we're responding and we're feeling and caring about them. But also, I sort of giggled when one of them said that, they're always thinking about what they could do or what they could improve. I just finished reading Barbara Kingsolver's Animal Vegetable Miracle today.
Oh, that's a great book.
Yeah.
I read that book.
I jump in the shower to just get cleaned up, and all of a sudden I'm planning this huge unit to do with my 10th grade English students. I mean, this is not nutrition science or anything, but it's English. But, maybe here in the Shenandoah Valley, maybe I can get them to find a friend who is a farmer. Where can they find locally sourced food? Maybe let's put together a class book of recipes. Let's use the foods that we love to write poetry. I mean, just all of these things just start coming, and I'm not asking them to, but that's just kind of part of who I am now. And I love it, but, you don't really have a pen in the shower to start writing all this stuff down.
Yeah.
So it really does sort of change who you are as a person to be a teacher.
I think that brings up the whole thing that we're talking about. What was something that's maybe a misconception of other people
is that the
job or what you're teaching in the class is always evolving. So if you're thinking about a new book or new, whatever it is, I think some people think, oh, you just pull out the same notes year after year, but it's nothing like that.
No, I will concur. A good classroom is one that has a lot of spontaneity and inspiration that comes from lots of different places.
One thing I found in the last couple of years of teaching was that to start off the class in social studies, I switched from using quotes or, they always want you to do something or other to get started. And I would find these awesome YouTube clips on, somebody becoming a citizen or something that caught the kids' attention, because you're always trying to find, where are they now? It's 2012. Where are they now? And what's going to grab them? And then where can I go from there? So it's always evolving.
Jessica, thank you so very much for your call. Phone number 888-WMRA-TALK, 888-967-2825. Two high school teachers and one recently retired middle school teacher here in the Insight studio if you want to talk to them. You can also post a comment or question on our Facebook page where we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. Okay, I was hoping somebody was going to call in and ask the difficult questions, but it looks like I might have to do some of them myself because nobody by phone is being this mean.
The bad guy. Come on.
That's good. I'm
there
glad
is
the rotten
change.
Student in the back.
A fair amount of conversation in America today about lack of quality in public school education. Is that an unfair assessment? Don't we have a problem compared to much of the rest of the industrialized world with how well our students are doing, how many are graduating from high school, how many are going on to college, how well they can do in science and math and reading compared to other places in the world?
I'll go first. That's a big question. I mean, that's, we're going to get.
My blood's still boiling over here, so you go ahead and speak.
We're going to get into a little bit of the politics, I guess. And it's hard to know where to start. All of the children in this country are entitled to an education. All of the children in this country are tested accordingly, and our test results sometimes maybe don't match those of other countries because it's not an apples for apples kind of thing.
Tell us more about that. How is it not apples for apples?
Because not in other countries, not all kids are being educated, or they get to a certain grade and they're put in different tracks. And I just think our system is unique, and I think until all systems are the same, it's going to be hard to make those kinds of comparisons. I will add to that on the political side, and I will tiptoe perhaps a little bit. We have policies that are hindering education, and, testing, I can see where it was intended to be a good thing, but I think it's hindered progress in a lot of ways. And there are other policies in force that we are now rethinking that I think have hurt education overall.
One is the idea that so much politics is involved in education. I don't understand why the state legislature sets what subjects are taught. I'm a big proponent of international studies, which we don't have in our schools because of policies set by the state. Pretty much we don't have international studies. But so that's one thing, that there's too much. I see it as interference. Or, people get swing in the direction of, well, we just want back to basics, and they'll pull out the art and they'll pull out the music. And these are the things that educators know enhances education, helps people understand math and English and writing much better, but the politicians will pull it out. So there's some of that. I agree with that. In most industrialized countries around age 14, there's a great divide, and only one segment goes to the college-bound group, and so we're being tested against that. We do a great job on allowing kids to be creative. We produce a lot more Nobel Prize winners, that sort of thing, than other countries.
I can tell by the look in your eye that you may have a little bit more that you want to say, Margie. And we still got Paul Chick.
Yeah, you only have a one-hour program.
Oh, please, yes.
Yeah,
please,
no
yes. And there's the whole question, if I'm going to push, about accountability as well. So we're going to get to all this when we get back in just a moment. We have three teachers here on this edition of Virginia Insight. Paul Chigfry teaches high school math in Augusta County. Susan Petriella teaches high school English in Rockbridge County. And before retiring last year, Margie Shepherd taught primarily middle school social studies and English during her some 25 years with the Albemarle County School District. I'm Tom Graham, phone number 888-WMRA-TALK. Paul Chigfry, you want to take a swing at this?
Oh, I'll try. I totally agree with my colleagues here on what they've been saying. But I think we do need to get better at what we do. I certainly know I need to get better at, if I can get better at my little job inside my classroom, and then everyone can take care of their own little job, that we can get better. Now, the politics, I follow them, but my classroom is my classroom, and I figured this is the best I can do. The forces outside of me, when I close that door, they have nothing to do with what I do inside the classroom. And I am accountable for those kids, and I should be held accountable. But in what way I get judged on that is it's kind of above my pay grade. You know, I'll understand it. I'll do it. I'll salute smartly and carry on because I probably won't have a say in how it's done. But I am accountable. And I
think you being judged fairly? Are other teachers being judged fairly?
Well, and currently, I know I am being judged fairly. Now, whether or not there's another method coming out this year that I know that's going to happen on how teachers are evaluated. And
but
I'm
when
sure
you
that's going to be evolved.
When you see this dialogue playing out in the political spectrum and in the mass media about teachers not being accountable, about the idea that America is not doing nearly as well in public education as it should, and as your colleagues were saying, what they consider unfair comparisons, but still comparisons being made to other industrialized countries around the world where it appears that their students are doing better. How do you feel when much of this gets, the blame gets laid, Paul Chigfry, at the feet of people in your profession?
Oh, I get angry. I get angry that everything's dumped on our door. But then you kind of have to look back at it and say, we have to improve. My boss wants me to do this or my boss wants me to do that. Well, in private industry, you do what your boss says or you find another place of employment. And I find it that if you can work with your boss and you can work things out, it'll happen. It'll get better.
You can get all this stuff done. It's just that the quantity of testing that's being required on some levels is ridiculous, and the quantity of time that's spent, and the, you know, so then every county has to have a testing coordinator.
Margie Shepherd, because I think that this next call coming in is somebody who wants to speak on a similar subject. This is from Charlottesville. Jerry, are you there? Yeah.
I sure am.
Did I hear correctly that you had something you wanted to say about testing?
Yes.
Go ahead.
I think that I agree with your last guest that basically if teachers were allowed to teach and we weren't so burdened with all of the testing, that we would be able to have more diversity within what we're teaching, being able to be innovative and coming up with other ideas about how to teach our subject. But because of all of the testing, because of all of the standards that we have to meet, we are so limited that we're not allowed to teach. We're not allowed to use our creativity to be able to draw that creativity out of our children, out of our students.
Jerry, this is just a guess here, but I'm thinking maybe you've been a teacher, you are a teacher?
I am a teacher.
What do you teach?
I teach health at the high school level.
I concur. I would say the best way to sum it up is the tail's wagging the dog.
What does that mean?
It means that everything's being driven by testing, but the problem with testing is that the testing supposedly tests the minimum competency. So now we're focusing on the minimum.
But
well, it's also
but to use Susan Petriella
choice.
And to our caller Jerry from Charlottesville, it seems to me that one of the reasons that we got to a lot of standardized tests and moved this direction the past 10 or 15 years is because a lot of people were worried about accountability. Jerry, do you think that parents have legitimate reason to be concerned about accountability, about the degree to which their kids are learning what they need to learn?
I think that teachers need to be accountable, but I think that having standardized testing, such as what we have today, even though it's being changed, I think that it really was, as I don't know which speaker stated it, but that when we're testing to a minimum, everybody loses. Whereas when we're testing or teaching to the potential of our students based on a generalized guideline, then I think everybody wins more so than teaching all of these tests to try to bring everybody up to this minimum standard. and I think that's been a huge downfall.
This is Margie.
I'm not opposed to testing, and I'm really not opposed to standards. If it were up to me, I would have national tests on, at least in math and English. I think one of the problems is we've got 50 different testing systems, and so we're doing all this running around testing, and then the kids can't use it for getting into college or anything because the SOLs in Virginia mean something totally different than the FCATs or whatever they are in Florida.
And I'm sorry, but I have to do this because we have people driving along through Virginia who have no idea that in this state, SOL means something completely different than the other 49 states. So we always have to take time and say that in Virginia, they've decided to call it Standards of Learning.
Right, right. But SOL. In one of the, when they're talking about the excellence and where they do it best, these days, they talk about Finland. And they do have high-stakes testing in Finland as an end product, but the teachers are given a lot of time and freedom in planning the curriculum in a local level, knowing what the standards are that they've got to get to. So they're doing testing, they're doing standards, they're just using their own creativity, their own skills to get there, and they're given the time and for planning that. So that's, you know, so people are saying, well, we should be like that, except that we want to test you all the time, so that it's you can't do both.
Jerry, thanks so much for taking the time to call us. We've still got just a couple minutes left to fit in any additional calls and a couple lines open at 888-WMRA-TALK. If you'd like to talk about teaching, the life of the teacher, what you think should or should not go on in public school classrooms with Rockbridge County High School teacher, English teacher Susan Petriello, teacher of high school math in Augusta County, Paul Chigfry, and former teacher of middle school social studies and English in Albemarle County, Margie Shepherd. Next to Lexington, Dory, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment, please.
Hi. Hello, Susan. I know.
Hi,
Susan.
Dory. I recognized your voice right away.
I've been a volunteer in classrooms and in school libraries for about 30 years. And the teachers that I've worked with are just so impressive to me. I spent the last 8 years or so in a kindergarten class, and I think the people who set up the SOLs don't really know that, say not only in kindergarten, but I also worked with the middle school class one time, that when kids come in the morning, maybe they haven't had their medications. Maybe there's been a parent fight when they went home, or maybe the mother had to work overnight at Walmart and the kid had to stay in the back room the whole night because there wasn't a babysitter. So it's not so easy to say, okay, this week you're going to teach this specific line of work and then you're done. And then you go on next week to the next thing. And it doesn't matter what kind of class dynamic is going on in your classroom. You got to go on. You got to keep on going because that's what the SOLs say you have to do. I've found teachers who have found it so frustrating, and I just see them just totally dedicated to their students and to their work. And the last thing I'm going to say is I think that K-12 teachers ought to be paid what college professors are paid. And maybe the other way around, too.
Dory, thanks so much for sharing your perspective with us. Margie Shepherd, I want to turn a little bit of attention to this work that you're doing now that you're no longer in a middle school classroom every day.
Right.
This has something to do with the National Board certification process?
National Board certification came out of the A Nation at Risk report from the 1980s. It's a program that was developed by teachers for teacher excellence. It is a master teacher program. It's difficult to get through. It is totally focused on teachers augmenting student learning. So what are you doing to help the students learn this? What are you doing if they can't get it? What are you doing if they need more enrichment? You have to videotape yourself. You have to analyze your work. You have to write these portfolios. You have to take a test. So it's very involved. It takes about a year and very difficult to pass. But what I'm running is a mentor group. And in Albemarle County, we have 15 nationally board certified teachers. There's several hundred in the state of Virginia. And I had a group of 18 last year and 27 so far this year. It's a
So
it's
in essence, what
program.
You're doing is teaching teachers to be better teachers.
I am mentoring them as they go through the process where really they are the one. I'm not teaching them so much.
But the
as
end result you're looking for is improvement
is
in
improvement.
Their teaching abilities.
Right. So I went through the process when I had already been teaching for about 20 years. But it really makes you focus on what are you doing in the classroom? Is this working? What are you doing to improve it when it doesn't work? What are you doing with the kids that need more than that, either because they are more advanced or they're struggling more? So,
and it's this kind of program that you would like to see more Virginia teachers invested in rather than standards of learning tests?
Well, I think that's a totally different kind of thing. But the thing that I like about National Board is one of the objects of the whole program is to keep good teachers in the classroom. Often teachers get moved to be supervisors or principals or assistant principals, or they do something else, or they sort of get burned on it. If you're more teaching more consciously and therefore having more success at it, the idea is to keep good teachers in the classroom. The state of Virginia supports this with additional pay for teachers who pass the National Board certification. Some of the counties in Virginia support this with additional pay. Albemarle County gives teachers $1,000 more per year to keep excellent teachers, and also gives them leadership positions. So it's a wonderful program to help teachers improve, but also keep good teachers in the classroom.
Before we run out of time, I want to get to at least part of this that came in on our Facebook page a few minutes ago. This is from Rona. It's a very long post, so I'm only going to be able to read a little bit of it, but anybody who wants to see all of Rona's comments can sign on to WMRA's Virginia Insight on Facebook and read for themselves. She says here, I worked 15 years in business. Teaching takes much more effort and attention than anything I did as a manager for a major financial corporation. I have never had an unencumbered winter or summer break as a teacher. Every 2 years, I have to read 2 to 3 new textbooks and revise my course syllabus. Margie is correct about the workload increases. When I started teaching 16 years ago, English teachers were told their student load would not exceed 100 students. Now we have 6 classes averaging 25 students or more. We need a good time management study to expose what teachers really do.
Well, along with the politics is the money. And times are difficult now, and class sizes are bigger, which makes them more difficult to, I think, handle. Hard to connect with every kid every day as your class. I mean, I try to connect with every kid every day. When you get up to 110, 120 kids, that's not easy to do. Testing is a problem in education, but it's not just testing. It's money. It's duties that really don't have a whole bunch to do with teaching that teachers are sort of saddled with, and that take time from the creativity, the research, the writing, excellent lesson plans. I mean, there are a myriad of problems, and I don't think we can pin it on any one thing. But teachers are encumbered, I would say.
Ray in Harrisonburg, we're just about out of time, so if you could make your question or comment a quick one, please.
Yeah, sure. I just wondering how the new SOLs and some of the new legislation has affected teachers' ability to teach students differently, to teach to a student's learning style or learning ability. And I'll take the answer off air.
Thanks, Ray.
Well, part of that, I kind of like that the testing has, for me in the math world, I'd like to go off on some of the stuff that we look at each day and maybe talk about how it pertains to practical application, maybe on the farm or maybe on this. But, you know, some of that takes a little work to get done, may take me a whole day to go through that with a class And sometimes I just don't have that kind of time to go off on a tangent, maybe talk
about this.
I think
part of what Ray was asking is, does what you must do in order to meet government-mandated standards by things such as the testing for standards of learning have an influence on the degree to which you can adapt to different students' learning styles?
I wouldn't say that it has an influence, except that you know that you know, when kids are little, everybody understands that, oh, this kid is good in this, this kid is good in something different. And so there are kids that are good in writing and drawing and putting together a project. But if we're testing everybody on multiple choice, that their strengths don't come out in that. So it's not so much in the teaching, but in showing all kids strengths when we look at the whole child.
Our guests have been Susan Petriella, chair of the English department at Rockbridge County High School, plus from Augusta County, Paul Chigfry, a teacher of 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th grade math at Wilson Memorial High School, and from Charlottesville, Margie Shepherd, who retired just last year after 25 years at Henley Middle School in Albemarle County. Thank you all for making time for us.
Thanks.
Thanks, Tom.
It's been great being on.
Yeah,
you can find
here.
Audio postings of Virginia Insight by going online to WMRA.org, then clicking on Programs, and then clicking on Insight. And if you go to that page, you'll find links to more information about all of our guests. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more Insight.